A large part of compassion is being with difficulty. And that in and of itself, I think, is difficult, perhaps. It's definitely challenging. In Paul Gilbert's book, which I'm reading now, Mindful Compassion, he makes an observation that from research, from his own experiences, through quotes from famous people, that simply being aware of suffering is not enough. It can actually be overwhelming. So that's just one small part of compassion. And another, it's really the second part in terms of the formal definition, is to be aware of suffering and then to want to alleviate it, to be moved in a particular way. And he really talks about these two dimensions of compassion. And the second dimension is this sort of what we might call positive affect or compassionate sort of container that this awareness of suffering is embedded in. And I think this week in particular is really a really wonderful, because we really are tapping into that dimension we don't talk about suffering at all this week or difficulty. It's about kindness, self-kindness in particular. I'm sort of talking off the cuff now before we share, because I think it's important, and I'm tying this in perhaps to maybe some struggles that people might have with the self-compassion practice. I've said that compassion cultivation is counterintuitive to me, every aspect of it. And really the first, to me, where it hits first is this idea that opening ourselves to suffering willingly is somehow something we should be doing, or beneficial, or in my free time, right? I'm gonna spend 20 minutes thinking about my loved one suffering. Like, what's that about? And one of the, and it really has to do with this kind of positive, and this is my perspective, this kind of positive affect or compassionate container. That's what we're really cultivating. We're not cultivating. That's what we're really cultivating, is this sense of compassion, which feels good, honestly, to me. It feels, anyhow, I'll offer that up as a possibility that it feels spacious, open, perhaps, meaningful. And one of the kind of important neuroscience studies that was done on compassion cultivation just a few years ago, and I'll put this up if I haven't, by a person named Klemecki and others, which isn't important now. But basically, this is the down and dirty lay version. I'm not going to talk in terms of the brain regions and stuff, because I can't really. Basically, like many science studies, they'll have a control group and various control groups. But basically, in this particular study, what they did is they took people and put them in different groups and exposed them to suffering. And I think it was watching videos of videos of people in some sort of traumatic or suffering situation, and then they monitored what's going on in individuals as they're watching these. And the idea is that there's some sort of connection or affection between the individuals watching and the person's experiencing the suffering. And so what they noticed is, and there's lots of empathy studies on this, that like if you're really resonating with somebody and they're suffering, part of what goes on is it's registering in your brain as if kind of you're going through it yourself. So there's some suffering, and then that sort of gets translated into distress or overwhelm or something like that. But whatever brain activity is going on, it's basically experienced as distress, or I don't want to be experiencing this. And so then they like randomized people and they gave people different interventions. And then one of the interventions was a compassion protocol, similar to this compassion, love, and kindness protocol. And what they found was that and then at the end, they all were experiencing suffering again, exposed to suffering. And the persons in the compassion group, other parts of their brain were activated that were affiliated with positive affect and emotional regulation and these sorts of things. So that, to me, that's a really important study because it really gets at, in my experience, really what we're doing with compassion cultivation. And it's really counterintuitive, I think. I think I alluded to this in one of the emails, but I think this, when we're sending out those positive aspirations, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering, I think it's really boosting and enhancing that resilient capacity we have to be with suffering. So being with suffering, resilience is not just, I'm going to be with it. it's more this organic kind of wholesomeness or something like that. So I think in the kindness practice, the self-kindness practice, we're really tapping into that. In just this sort of wholesome capacity we have. And I think you might have got a taste of it in this opening practice. The kindness is not simply being nice to ourselves. It's really, in a sense, tapping into who we really are or something like that at our core, in terms of our core values. I don't typically do this in CCT. I just felt like the need to introduce some ideas that have been percolating in my mind. Instead of doing small groups like we have the last couple of weeks, I would like to open it up to discussion. Just where are you right now with the curriculum after 3 weeks going into week four? And anything particular that may be of interest to you or that has arisen for you in the context of self-compassion. Before we do that, I'd like to introduce this model, which I know most of you probably can't see. In a display of mindfulness, I drove off and left all my handouts I printed out. So this will be on the website, but basically, you don't have to see it. I'll just kind of point through it. And basically, this is called a cycle of experience, and this comes from Kelly McGonigal. I don't know where she got it, so I think it's something she probably came up with. And it's really meaningful to me as a model for different experiences that we can have when engaged in a practice where we're kind of primed to experience something, which these practices are, right? It's called compassion for a loved one, compassion for oneself. So there's a title there, so that indicates, right, I'm supposed to be experiencing this. In a sense, that's what the practice is intended to do. But that doesn't always happen or even usually happen. So I think it's important to acknowledge that. And I think that in of itself is an important point, but I think this model is very, very helpful. And basically, for those of you who can't see, it's just a kind of a circle with circles in it. With nine possible experiences. And this is a model for things that could occur when you're practicing one of these practices. And at the top here is contact. And by that, it would simply be, you're just kind of there with it. You're mindfully present to this practice. You're kind of there with it, right? It's, in some ways, you're resonating with it, being with it. You're not thinking about, you're just there with the practice. And then following from that, that can lead to what she calls here expansion. I might call growth or something like that. So some sort of transformation or something's happening in addition to just being with it. Maybe some insights, maybe some sort of physical movement, something shifting, so to speak. And from there, that can go into overwhelm. We can grow too much or expand too much or explore new territory too much, and that could lead to becoming overwhelmed. And I would like to say this isn't a cycle necessarily like linear. It doesn't necessarily go in these stages, but it's simply things that could occur. Distraction. I mean, distraction could be a way to deal with overwhelm, like is it sort of a defensive kind of thing, or could simply be our mind is, for whatever reason, we're distracted. I'm engaging in this practice. This morning I was using my son on with the compassion for a loved one component, and I was thinking about this class. I couldn't stop thinking about the class today, and so I wasn't there with the practice at all. I was going through the motion, so to speak. Unconscious. That's where you're just not there consciously with it at all, including, falling asleep. Avoidance. I'm avoiding this. And then a more extreme form of that would be just flat out rejection. You know, this, I'm not doing this. I don't like this. I'm not going to do it for whatever reason. Explicit rejection. And again, this will be on the website. I apologize. I wrote this in a real, and I sat over on the couch and I was like, I can't read it. So I'm sure others can't. It's very pretty though. Numb, fake, just kind of going through the motions. That's something that occurs quite often for me. And may you be free from suffering, but you know, I'm not feeling it. I'm just doing it. And then intention. It's like I'm kind of going through the motions, but I am tapping into this intention to be compassionate, or maybe tapping into my intention while I'm doing this practice, or I'm tapping into something intention-wise, but I'm not really feeling it or even fully there with it. So I found this model very helpful, just as a map for things that could happen and will happen. In my experience, if we do these types of things enough, and to me it's also important because it sort of to me normalizes these things. They're all of these are part of the process. And Kelly talks about the little practice and the big practice, and in the context of CCT. And the little practice is the practice we're doing at the time. And the big practice is really, can we hold that in a container of compassion, whatever's happening? Which ties back to me to self-compassion in a sense. And being with our emotions and our experiences. I talked way more than I intended, and I'm not going to apologize because I've been doing self-compassion practices for 2 weeks.